She was my most challenging supervisee. Not that she challenged me as a bad employee or a disruptive employee, but someone that made me think more critical, someone that made me understand what a leader was and not just managing, someone who just had what it took to do what she needed to do and just needed someone to say, you can do it. And so that was probably one of my most defining leadership moments. I mean, it was later in my career. I've done some good stuff prior to that, but at that point, when I see who she is today, I nod my head to her. I've grown because of her, and I will be forever indebted to her.
Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. This is Innovation Insights. Innovate so you do not stagnate. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I'm your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we are honored to welcome Bridget Johnson, a transformational higher education leader, equity strategist, and the founder of That Bridge, a consulting firm that designs equity-centered pathways to help employers not only attract the emerging professional, but truly prepare to receive and retain them.
That Bridge specializes in culturally responsive internship, apprenticeship, and professional development programs that turn career readiness into career belonging. With over 30 years of experience in higher education, including 13 years at Colorado State University, Bridget is nationally recognized for advancing access and equity across institutions. She has a proven track record of creating cross-functional partnerships that challenge the status quo and close opportunity gaps, yielding sustainable data-informed solutions for student and institutional success. Through both her university leadership and her work at That Bridge, Bridget is not only preparing individuals for success, she is preparing systems to embrace and elevate them. Let us welcome Bridget Johnson to the Innovation Insights podcast, a leader building pathways, breaking barriers, and boldly reimagining what equity in action truly looks like.
Bridget, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We have known each other for, 13, 14, 15 years. I don't know. It's been a long time.
At least 15.
We're together at Colorado State. We overlapped there for a little bit and then ended up kind of living in the same community area. And just have stayed in touch over the years. So it's really good. And I'm thrilled that you're also have joined the Innovation Insights team as one of our consultants. So I know you're working on programming with us. Just really thrilled to have you here. It's good. It's really good.
Yes. Good to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's start off with just a little bit about your background. How did you get into higher education? Because I believe that most people don't come out the womb thinking, I'm going to go into higher ed.
I would agree with that statement. That's for sure. Not only did I come out the womb thinking I was going to go into higher ed, I didn't even think I was going to go to college. So that was probably why I am so vested in the work that I've been doing over the last few decades, is because there was an opportunity that I didn't have access to. As a first generation Black woman, well, I think we were probably mid to low class, but my mother and father had us at probably mid class. But if I really think about it and think about the struggles, it was probably a little lower than I expected and more blue collar work. Nothing against blue collar work, but just trying to live the dream, right? And I literally, right after undergraduate, after attending an institution that I went to, the career fair, and the first one, college fair, and the first person I met, I went to that college. I didn't visit any other college. I just went there and just started my journey in higher ed and didn't last. I was on an academic scholarship that I lost and had to figure it out, and then went to a technical school and then finally ended up at a four-year institution in University of Wisconsin system, where I actually did pre-college work at and didn't even connect the dots that I went there in middle school and now I'm going there in college. So went back to the institution that poured into me unconsciously And I'm not intentional either. So if I would have done it intentional, I would have started off there. But I think because I knew there was opportunity out there, but I didn't have access to it, it was not tangible, that when I graduated from college, I was like, how do I make this available to other folks and not have to run around and figure it out? And I think that's where my journey started. Is I started off as an admissions counselor, and I specifically recruited Black and Southeast Asian students. And then my career just continued to roll and grow after that. So never intend to know, never intend to do that.
You've thinking about your 30 plus years in the field. What have been some of the highlights for you in your journey?
I had a lot of highlights. I really did. I think I was very honored to be surrounded by a mentor that I didn't know was a mentor at the time. I reflect on it, and now I know that she was a mentor. My pastor's wife was working at the institution I was working in, and she opened doors for me. And so it's about stand ready, so you don't have to get ready, kind of a thing. But I would say one of the most impactful times is supervising. And I had hired several people prior to that, a lot of students and some professionals, but one particular assistant director I hired, my first female assistant director that I hired. And when I saw her resume, I was not planning on hiring her. I was like, she got an interview. This is good, but I'm not going to hire her. However, when she came in and she did her open forum and she had to do a presentation, I stepped in the room and just listened to the presentations. And as she was talking, I giggled to myself. And I said, I'm hiring her. And so what I realized at that point, I can't judge people by a piece of paper. And so that was insightful for me. And I just walked back to my office and just giggling to myself, looking forward to our one-on-one conversation. And when she sat down, she didn't know it, but I knew she had the job because she showed up unapologetically, very focused, very sincere. And within 2 weeks of her working for me, I asked her a question. I said, so what are you going to do after you leave, after you're done here? And she's looking at me like, I just got here. What are you talking about? So we need to start planning for tomorrow. If you are still in the same place in 3 to 5 years, it's either by choice or I have failed you. And I said, so you either are going to be working on a PhD, even though I don't have mine, or you're going to be doing some type of leadership development, or you're going to be a director somewhere. You're too talented to stay back. And I don't want to hold you back. So if I have not prepared you to be successful, then I failed you. She was my most challenging supervisee. Not that she challenged me as a bad employee or a disruptive employee, but someone that made me think more critical, someone that made me understand what a leader was and not just managing, someone who just had what it took to do what she needed to do and just needed someone to say, you can do it. And so that was probably one of my most defining leadership moments. I mean, it was later in my career. I've done some good stuff prior to that, but at that point, when I see who she is today, I nod my head to her. I've grown because of her, and I will be forever indebted to her. Yeah. So one of my most remarkable stories.
I love that. And I love the testimony of you thinking about her career. I have watched so many supervisors. I've been supervised by people that didn't care about my career our future at all, not at all. And sometimes really just used me up in some ways. And So I love that you sat down and said, if you're here in this position, well, within 5 years, I have failed you. That really shows that you were willing to take ownership of that position of being a mentor and a coach and helping support this person's career path.
I told her, I said, you need to know what managing up means, because if you're not getting what you need, it's because I haven't provided you with the resources. And so if there's something I'm asking of you that you can't produce, tell me you can't produce because I haven't done X, Y, and Z. And she just is looking at me like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, I'm not kidding you, lady. Let's do this. We're in this together. So it was, we both received Yeah.
That is wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. And again, very rare out there, because I've seen, I've witnessed, I've experienced situations where, just good luck to you.
I have too. And that is, I want somebody to see me the arm, which is a lot more. I need people to drop to me. So.
Right. I've had some fabulous supervisors too that have done exactly, thought about, okay, this is where this person could go. But oftentimes, unfortunately, that doesn't happen, or it's a rub or jealousy, or let me just keep this person down.
Yeah.
So,
unfortunately, I'm sorry that happened to you, but I hear this story more and more often than I wish to have here.
No, it's very common. And what unfortunately happens is sometimes it's among women that do that to each other. And that is real.
It hurts a little differently.
Yeah. Oh, it does. Well, it. Yeah. There's a whole, we'll have to do a whole podcast on women in leadership at some point. I really can do via innovation insights, because there's a lot to unpack there. Right. Yeah. But what would you say your leadership style is, and how did you also touched a little bit on your commitment to equity, but how did that evolve?
I center myself, that might sound selfish, but let me elaborate more. I understand that who I am as a person is multifaceted, right? It's definitely multifaceted. And my Blackness is not monolithic. And I don't identify myself as a woman without my Blackness. And so I am a Black woman. And so my leadership style centers my identity. And that is so important to me in a way that I didn't understand until I was hit with a lot of barriers, right? And as a Black woman, I've had to navigate multiple spaces, as you probably have yourself. And I know that you and I both probably understand firsthand the impact of the systematic barriers and the feeling of, not just the feeling, the reality of being excluded. And these experiences really, truly fueled my passion to create inclusive environments, to listen more intentionally, and to understand folks' why, and then truly activate their true potential. That is really important. And I just really believe that my leadership is truly embedded, probably because of trauma, but it's embedded in empathy, it's embedded in listening, as well as empowering. So all three of those are really important to me as a leader, especially to those who are historically marginalized. And they have been, still are, some people that have been excluded, but making sure that those folks, our folks, are centered in decision-making. And making sure there's opportunities out there for us. And so that's my leadership. It's just out of empathy, listening, and empowering.
It's wonderful. That's why you align well with Innovation Insight. So. I do want to go back and talk a little bit about your career path and your background. You mentioned your undergrad. I know you have a master's. It's really nice for our audience sometimes because also I think when you're first graduating, especially from college, and sometimes high school too, you think that, you just go this way, you just go this way. And it's more like back forth and all around. And I don't know, you've held, I know most of your career from Colorado State and things that you did there, which were fabulous. But you talk a little bit about your graduate work and then how you entered to work in higher ed.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like I said, it found me, or we found each other. I don't know. But I was in admissions office for about, 5 years. And I was young then, had gray hair that I try to cover up. But I actually knew that my time in admissions was up, right? And I was starting to have a family and I didn't want to travel a lot. And I also, started doing some external work in this. I was a school board elected official, countywide election for a pretty large county. And I found myself getting really busy in the community, and the admissions work did not allow me to be with my community. And that was like the heartbeat of why my existence. And so I was on the road a lot. And then my oldest daughter was young and I didn't want to be traveling a lot. And so I told, I'm the type of person, ask for what you want, a closed mouth won't get fed. And I asked, I told my boss, I says, I can't do this that much longer. I need another job. And he's looking at me like, well, what are you talking about? And I grew the admissions, the students of color, specifically Black students and Southeast Asian, from 9% to 14%. So I was on the team that increased that in 5 years, which is significant. That sounds like a little bit, but that's a lot. That's a lot, you know. And so he knew I was good at what I was doing because I led with my heart and I always center the people first. And so it's about me getting to know parents and family members or guardians, and then also the student, right? So it was like a family thing. But anyways, I told him I sent you a new job and he said, good luck. And so there was this one guy, his name is Herb. And I don't know, he came in for 2 or 3 years at the institution and he left. I don't know where he went. But it was like he was asking people, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And people were kind of shying away from him. I'm not going to tell you what I want to do. And I was like, oh, let me tell you, I want to get out of admissions. I need to get into another job. And he said, what job? And my undergraduate, I did not visit the multicultural office at all. And that's what it was at the time. It still is there. And I didn't visit it often. Maybe every blue moon. But I was like, I want to be an advisor, coordinator. Because I was working with the students, as I was recruiting students, I was working with the current students to help me recruit. So we had like African-American open houses, Hispanic open houses, and the college students, the current college students came to work and recruit the incoming students. And so I got to know the students better and I became an advisor of the student organizations. So I thought I can do wonders in that area. And let me tell you, Yolanda, I was told I can become their coordinator. Like the position was opening up and if you want to do it, you can do it. Well, oh my God, yes. The week before I was supposed to start, the director quit. And I was like, okay, what am I supposed to do now? They're like, well, you want to be the director? And I'm like, I've never even been an assistant director. I haven't even been a coordinator. I've even worked on the retention side of the house. Like, are you kidding me? They're like, you can do it. You can do it. And I'm thinking, sure, I can. But then I didn't have my master's. I didn't have my master's, and that job required a master's. So I told them, I said, well, master. And they were like, well, we'll figure it out. We will just put you as an interim. If you start your master's, then we will at least take that into consideration. I said, well, if I don't get the job, can I get my job back? And they were like, sure, we give you a one term. And I had a student who just graduated who worked with me a lot as an undergraduate. I said, well, you can give her my job for a year so she can get experience, but I take this job. So it was really about me always trying to make sure people have opportunities. I'm not looking out just for myself. So I said, give John Ray this job, then I'll take this job. If things don't work out, then I'll go back to my job. And then maybe I was just, well, they're like, okay, sure. So I did that. And during that time, I wrote something called Plan 2008. That's how old it, long time ago it was. Plan 2008 for the diversity plan for the University of Wisconsin system. And I did a lot of community building. The office had no students were going to the office. I had rebuilt the community. I started, got a new position. They started. And then I hired my first person, my assistant project coordinator in the office. And I said, you need to go get your master's. And then I told John Ray, she needs to get her master's too. And they're like, what about you? And I'm like, oh, you're right. You're right. So all three of us traveled to Milwaukee. And took classes together, me and my mentee and my coordinator. And we were all taking classes together. I'm like, we in this together. So it just cracks me up that, you know, they're my peers now. I was their boss. And it was just amazing that it was like, let's learn together. So we learned together. We got our master's together. So it was not the straight path. It was like, I got a job, got another job. Then I needed the job to keep the job. I needed a master's to keep the job. So that's where I was. And then Herb left and they needed an assistant to the chancellor for equal opportunity. And they were like, Bridget, you want to do that? And I'm like, no. And they're like, but you were really good at Plan 2008 and all this. And I'm like, I don't have any law experience. The University of Wisconsin system had a pool of lawyers that really were resources to each institution. So I said, well, can I keep my director job? And they're like, sure. I said, but I need an assistant director. You got to do this other job. So can I promote my coordinator to an assistant director? And then I can do that job. And they were just like, well, no. I said, well, no, I can't either then. Sorry, because it's not realistic. They came back around and said, okay, we'll give you money to do that. I'm like, okay. So then I landed my position as the assistant to the chancellor. It was supposed to be 1 year. It lasted 3 years. And probably would have been longer, but then I moved to Colorado. But that's how I started to expand my portfolio, is by just being my shoulder tap, making sure I was not consciously putting myself in opportunities, but obviously I was. Like, I was getting on committees, I was asking questions and challenging the status quo. And then when I went to Colorado, I didn't work for a few years, of getting my family acclimated to a new environment, because I was like, how aware? I looked on a map, because back in the day, I had to unfold it, you know, and I'm like, where in the world is Colorado on the map? Oh, here? I mean, we're not going to the south. We're not going to the coast. Like, we're going to Colorado. And I moved to Colorado, and personally, I met some of my most fondest friends there. I grew drastically as an employee, as a professional. I did some great work at Colorado State University, where I served as the director of the Black Cultural Center. Before that, I volunteered for the first year or two. I was like doing some consulting work in 2006 with the then director. And I was like, oh, let me do some consulting work. Let me volunteer here. Let me do this. And then then the position came open. I said, oh, I'm going to put my hat in the ring. And then I became assistant vice president of inclusive excellence. Actually, before that, I wrote myself a job description. I had started a lot of new programs with the institution, and I found myself doing three jobs. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, because I'm an innovator. That's why Innovation Insights is perfect. And I'm thinking, there's opportunity here, there's opportunity there. Let me do all of it. And next thing you know, I was way overwhelmed. And I said, nope, I need to figure this out. And I asked them, I said, listen, this program and this program are no longer going to be in existence, because I'm only going to concentrate on my job unless you give me this new job. And at that time, it was during the pandemic. They're like, we don't even know if we're going to exist tomorrow. And I said, well, I don't know if these programs are going to exist tomorrow, because I can't do it all. And finally, during COVID, I was promised a new position. And I wrote myself the job description, wrote myself in my salary, got it all approved right in the middle of the pandemic. And I made myself the program manager for student success, where I was trying to bridge the gap between student affairs and academic affairs. And I was really excited about some innovative programs, idea for undergraduate research and STEM field. And then knocked on my door was the new vice president for inclusive excellence, was then DEI. And she said, do you want to be an assistant vice president? And I'm like, huh? And she said, based off the work you're doing, this is the caliber, and then we're going to add this onto your portfolio. And I'm like, sure. You know, it wasn't that easy, but basically, sure. And then that's when I kept going. So it was just, you know, having great people to say my name in rooms I'm not in, and positioning myself to say yes and back it up with experience. But yeah, so that's not a little bit of a current. I always tend to go back and get a doctor like you, Dr. Sanders. That has not happened. Yes.
No, not too old. Never too old for it. Never too old.
Okay. Yes.
Earl, thank you for sharing that. I just do feel like it's very helpful for people to realize that, no, you can put a plan out there, but other opportunities happen. People mention your name, as you said.
Yeah.
Oh, well, talk to us about that bridge. I attended the launch that you had, and that was amazing. It was exciting to hear more about it. But tell us about that bridge and what it is and what your mission and hope to do with it.
Yeah, with all my years working in higher education, it inspired me to think beyond my work in higher education and how do I transition out of higher ed into my own thing. And so what happened is I was truly witnessing a frustrating disconnect between higher education and the employment sector. Like, I saw so many talented students not getting real opportunities that they deserve. And I was like, this is crazy. I know I've been knowing these students for 4 years, sometimes 5 years, and they weren't getting the opportunities. Internships were not where they were. If they did get internships, it was like busy work. You know, it was like pushing paper. There was nothing that was meaningful that would help them with the professional growth. And it was just really discouraging, knowing who these individuals were and who they could be, right? What I've seen the growth in such a short period of time. And at the same time, because of some programs, I started working a lot with industry, specifically in the STEM field. And I was talking to a lot of HR people, and a lot of HR people were truly focused on hiring, benefits, maybe some engagement stuff or retention stuff. But there was not a lot of companies that were really fully engaged to prepare students in ways that really truly aligned with their needs or goals. And so I saw, you know, these students were going into these companies and their supervisors were too busy to really sit with them. They were more making transactions with them, right? They were not being in community with them. And there's a huge difference. And so the gap was definitely between the students' need to thrive and the companies and the employers not knowing what to expect from them. And so they were graduating feeling. So then when they graduated, they were feeling lost. I saw them feeling inexperienced. They were in debt and they didn't really have much to show for their money, because in their minds, I have a degree, but I don't have the experience. So this is a waste of time. So they weren't looking at their education as holistic as we do as educators, right? But they were thinking, what am I, you know, input, output, I put in all the work, what am I going to get out of it? And they weren't getting that in a way that satisfied them. And our mission in that bridge, it works in higher education by intentionally connecting students and employers through equitable career pathways. And so I'm designing internships or pathways, not traditional internships, but pathways that are really intentional and targeted based off of the employer's needs. And so as we design those internships, then I'm also building a talent pool of students by engaging with those centers that I used to work in, the Black Cultural Centers or the First Generation Groups, or those academic student organizations. So at the same time as I'm building the talent pool, I'm also working with employer to create internships or pathways that will look at the student holistically. And one thing that's unique about the bridge is that not only are we designing this internship, or what I like to call a vocational fellowship, because I think it's really important for the student to understand the entire company, not just a role, right? So I want them to rotate around the company to learn more and have a project. But at any rate, I want to also mentor the student or provide professional development opportunities throughout their internship. So I'll be working with them every week and talking about those soft skills and talking about how to have those critical conversations, how to respond to, you know, feedback that may feel kind of like, ooh, what do I do with that? And so the employer is not having to, quote unquote, worry about that. I'll be working with that. And then if they hire the professional, then I would be excited to work with that emerging professional for that first year and continue to work with them on those those soft skills. And eventually I would love for those employers that are going to be now managers, that they now can give back to the students I'll be recruiting to that talent pool. So become a full circle, become a holistic kind of a thing. And so I'm really excited about it, because I also provide professional development to the employers, the supervisees, to understand what is Gen Z? Who are they? So I'm really excited about the bridge. And it's about students ensuring that they get real experience and support, and that the companies benefit from a diverse talent pool so their companies can grow and thrive.
Oh, that's fabulous. That's how you definitely identified a gap. I'm on an advisory council for hospitality internships, and they're doing some of the same work, trying to build that bridge between academia and businesses. And yeah.
So hospitality, I have a business advisor that I just secured. I'm so thankful. But she was like, you need to identify, you were at my meeting, and my vision is so big. And I'm looking at hospitality, health professions, and construction are the three industries that I'm initially targeting. So I know two of them within the college that you were in at Colorado State.
And I was also a department chair for a hospitality program.
I don't think that, maybe I forgot.
Yeah, we're here in Iowa State. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, at Iowa. Okay. So maybe I can learn a thing or two from you or more.
Well, I don't know. I have much to learn in this world still. What are some of the misconceptions that employers have about equity-centered internships and talent development programs?
I would say one of the big misconceptions that I hear often is that equity-centered internships are too complicated and they're only for big companies. And that's just not true. You don't need to overhaul everything that you have. You just need to thoughtful structure that is with the right support. And you also need somebody that's willing to listen and adapt. And so sometimes we get so stuck in our ways that you think, oh, that's just way too much. And it's not too much. But once you do it, it will be more lucrative than if you don't do it. Another one is that diverse talent is hard to find. Like, I've been looking and looking, I just can't find it. And that's not true. The talent is definitely out there, as well as the diverse talent is out there. And that bridge is, we're not looking just at four-year institutions. So let me be clear. And I'm also looking at trade schools. I'm also looking at two-year colleges. And so there's talent out there. And those three industries I was telling you about, all three of them also have two-year pathways too, right? And so that was intentional, that I'm not just looking at four-year schools. When we see college or university, it's more than that. And then someone asked me, what about high schoolers? And I'm thinking, I don't know, but maybe pause, but I can't do it all. But something that's in the back of my mind. But an equity isn't just about opening the door. And so they think, oh, I've done misconceptions. Oh, I opened the door, come on in. But it's about the experience that those students have. And that's important. And we need to ask, are these students getting mentored? The skills real? Of course, things are real, but are they professional growth skills? Are they growth mindset? Do they feel supported? And so we need to bring them in. And when we bring them in, we need to help them stay and we need to help them grow. So I think sometimes people think it's just not tangible. That's not realistic. But it's hard when we've been doing internships the traditional way for so long, but it's okay. And you don't need to have your whole HR staff do it. All they gotta do is call me, and they don't need to hire a person. They can just hire me as a consultant, and I'm in and out. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's, I also had me thinking too about career readiness versus career belonging, because you can be ready, but belonging. And so, can you talk, a little bit about that? The differences?
That's a good question. That's a great point, because there is a distinct difference. And so I appreciate you thinking about that. And so career readiness is basically having the skills, about the skill, very skill. Do I have a resume? Let's start there. And how are we selling ourselves on our resume? How to show up for an interview? How do you communicate professionally? Can you work on a team? And so those are like checkbox things, right? Can you do the job? And I think career belonging, not I think, I know career belonging is a lot different, because I know when I belong and I know when I am not, and when I'm excluded. And that's going to determine if I'm going to be retained or not. And so career belonging goes a couple steps further, not just one step further. It goes a couple steps further, and it has to be intentional. It's about whether what someone feels like they actually belong in the space that they're working in. I mean, we have so many hours at work, and if you do not feel like you belong, that's problematic. That is really taxing physically and mentally and emotionally. I know from experience, unfortunately. Do people feel like these emerging professionals feel like they belong? And that will make or break somebody for a long trajectory of their career. If they feel like they're not valued, or they're not respected, or they're not seen. They talk about this generation that they're not going to be there long enough. And I ask the question, why don't they want to be there long? That's probably because they don't feel like they belong. Have they been included in real conversations or even given the chance to grow? What type of professional development are you offering, if any? They're so about getting the job done, but not investing in the person to get the job done. Someone could be 100% ready on paper. We see it all the time, and they still leave a job because the environment is not safe or it's not supportive. And so we got to think about, how are we investing? I think if we invest in a person and help develop and grow them, then they're willing to stay longer because they see that we are focused on them. So I think we have to be focused on both career skills and readiness. We have to get them ready, but we work with employers at that bridge to create spaces where they can feel like they belong. Not just belong, but thrive. So
then also on the academic side, what can education and academia do to help prepare our students for careers?
I think that academia thinks they're doing everything because they're academia, right? We do the research and we know, but I think that universities are sitting on incredible opportunities right now. They don't even realize, they're on gold mines, if they really be truthful about it. We know that they're always in the place of learning, but they can be so much more than that. And I think that they I think they can expand the word learn. Like we always say, they need to learn. Students need to learn, but I'm asking who's teaching, right? And what does teaching look like? And is it inclusive? Is it holistically? Or is it just learn what I'm teaching you, but you can't use your own thought, right? So you're limiting the growth, the mindset. I think universities are launch pads. They're launch pads to the future. And they're definitely a bridge between, they need to realize that they're a bridge between education and industry. And I think the education, you know, it's hard pill to swallow, but education is a business. And I think that if we start owning that, I think that we will show up differently for our students. Safe spaces for students to not only gain knowledge, but to figure out who the heck they are is very, very, very important. We need to care about what they care about. And we want them to care about what we think they should care about. And we want to make sure, we want them to show up in a great way and represent that institution. They're really the models. Our students are the models for these institutions, and we're not even allowing them. They're telling us how they feel, but if we're really smart, we can be the models so they can be telling the story differently. And they can tell the story differently by building relationships. I think that is really important. Those office hours that students never go to, I know you do as a professor, but then also what can professors do of getting out of the classroom and being part of student organizations or fashion shows? And really building up those relationships that are so essential to their growth. And not just handing students job boards at a career fair, but actively partnering with employers, taking students on site visits, being involved in the community. A lot of institutions back in the day, they were very involved in the communities. And I think that they haven't. We want the community to come to them, you know, because they are the learning institution, but are the institutions going out into the community and bringing in the community? Is so important because what happens is the next generation sees you out there, right? And now they want to be part of you. It's a twofold. And our alumni, why aren't we working with our alumni better in co-creating opportunities? And so universities have an opportunity to work with students, the companies, the alumni, the community to generate real life experiences, right? Before the student even graduates. And so they're introducing the student to the real, quote unquote, real world. And also, lastly, I think that the universities need to redefine how they think about success or student success specifically. I don't think it's just about the degree completion. It hasn't ever been just about the degree completion. It's about helping students feel confident and connected in how to navigate this world and be career ready, right? And I'm not going to lie. Students, why are you here? They're here to get a career. They want a job. They want to make money. But as they're navigating that process, they're also looking to build up their confidence. They're also looking to feel like they're connected. But a lot of institutions are not holding that. So mentorship is a huge way. So I believe truly, Yolanda, that if universities lean into the community a little bit more, if they lean into collaboration outside of the institution, and they center cultural relevance, they can absolutely shape the world of work. And I bet you employers will want to work with them more and alumni would come back twofold. Alumni, they tell us all the time, it's talent, treasure, and time. And universities usually look at just the talent, the treasure. The talent and the time is just as important.
Oh, such excellent insights and advice. And I think we're at a turning point in education. And I think making some of those changes will be important. We will see. Thinking about emerging leaders that are entering into higher ed, what would your advice be? You've had such varied roles in higher ed and have really worked to bring together different groups. What would your advice
be? You tell leaders like professionals?
The emerging professionals that are entering into higher ed. Someone has very recent grad. They have gotten a job on a college campus. And what advice would you give to them?
Don't forget about the people. You know, don't forget about the people is really, really important to me. Policy and strategy, your promotion is really, really important. I get it. But I think is don't forget about the people, like who's in the room, not just the students, but your colleagues, whose voice is heard, who's accountable. I would tell these new professionals, and I have told them, is to lead with humility. It's really important. Some of my same values that I shared with you earlier is lead with humility, listen. Oh my gosh, listen. Like, two ears, one mouth, listen. And act with intention. Get clear on what equity really means to you, not based off of what this person says or the institution says, not just in theory, but in real, real practical life. It's not about being the savior, the hero. I think a lot of young professionals feel like they got to save the world. And so they get themselves caught up in some narratives that they don't need to. And they misalign their values with the institutional values, right? They think the institutional values need to align with their values. And that's not going to be the case. And so then they find themselves struggling in the workplace because, you know, because they don't match my values. They're not going to ever match your values. It's okay. Your values are still your values. And it's not about power, shifting power and creating access. It is about shifting power and creating access for those that are less fortunate to be able to do that. And it's okay if you don't get credit. Like, it's okay because you don't get credit. So that's really important. And then I would tell them also to take care of themselves. This work can be heavy and draining and lonely. And a lot of people don't understand it. People don't understand what you're doing in higher ed. And so when you're talking to your engineers, your doctors, or your accountants, or your parents, they're like, what do you do every day? They don't even know. And so it's important that you find peers and mentors who get it, because you'll burn out. And the little things that you're doing are going to add up. It's like a ripple effect, right? It's going to build momentum. And you might not see it while you're there, when your team are there, but you should challenge every policy. You should challenge, you know, when students are not being affirmed, or change may not happen while you're there, but it will hopefully during time. But one thing that I tell myself all the time is, remember, your way is not the only way, and that we bring different truths to the table. And so much, it's so not about just the what something is, the why it is. And so seek to understand the why. I think we focus on what our differences are, or what you did, versus why we believe differently, or why our differences don't align. And it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily trying to win you over or make you believe what I believe, but I'm just understanding differently. And we can still disagree, but I understand your why, because my lived experience is different from yours. We're two Black women, right, in higher ed. But our what is the same, but our why and how we got here is totally different, right? So that's what I think.
I love that you said that, and the why and understanding and the differences. I had a staff member who made a derogatory comment about an ethnic group. And I was not happy about it. And I had to take a breath and
a deep one.
And yeah, a really deep one. And then Yolanda, how are you going to do this? You could shut this down and just say, that is inappropriate. Or you could sit and listen and try to understand why this person feels this way. And so I did. It took a lot. It took a lot. But I sat down and asked questions and to really understand why. And they had a reason for feeling the way that they did, from some personal experiences that happened in their family. And then I think through that conversation, too, that person realized that, I think for them, just even saying why they felt that way helped them also realize that it wasn't fair to then lump every person. It was about the Asian community, and they were lumping the whole Asian community into this. Yeah, based on basically the Japanese bombing of.
Oh, wow.
But it's been carried in them from family that had been impacted by that.
Generations, right?
Generations. And so this had impacted this person's how they, and they were in a front-facing role. So their interactions with Asians that were in the unit, anyone that came in the door or in the unit. And it was good for, I noticed a few little things, and this person made this comment. I was like, oh, I had such a better understanding by dropout. Why?
I just think it'd be a better world. You didn't necessarily agree with them after you learned. You just understood different.
Are you always trolling?
No. Can I treat every Asian person poorly that comes in because he can't nerve me because of this abdomen in your... It would be like... there's a lot of examples. Yeah, so thank you for really bringing that up. There's such great advice for young professionals. And also the part that it's hard in higher ed, because it is.
It is hard.
So that bridge is going to launch in the fall, right? Like officially big launch and everything? Or, okay. Well, we have you talk about that. Again, we'll have you back on to talk about it as it continues to grow. I know that you're working on some programming for Innovation Insights, too. Would you talk a little bit about your thoughts?
Oh, you can.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't say it on her and I didn't have any of the notes, but I thought,
have you talk just a little bit about what you're excited about doing with Innovation Insights, too?
I'm actually just excited to be part of your team. I think you have some great folks working with you, and the collaborative approach is a beautiful one. And so I'm looking forward to growing, learning from other consultants as well as yourself, for sure. And so some of the things that I want to do, I've been talking about emerging professionals a lot. And those mid-career folks, we have not forgotten about you. And it's really important. I think you get in a place in your career where you feel like you're stuck. And what's next? And so really wanting to bring some Black women together to have critical conversation about what is next. And is it a new job? Is it a leadership position? Or is it something that's innately internal? Am I alone? And do I feel targeted? Having those conversations and making it a brave space. I don't believe in making a safe space. I can't make any space safe. I don't want to do that. But hopefully the space become brave enough where we can just have some critical dialogue about our journeys and some setbacks and some heartaches. But then also about some triumphs and some celebrational things that we need to talk about. And one of the first programs that I am looking forward to working with you on is bringing these women together mid-career and just having some mentorship and some fellowship and some sisterhood. But we want to be rooted in resilience so that we can grow and thrive together and be a support to one another. We're so busy taking care of everybody else that sometimes it's okay, most times, all the time, to pause and put a mirror in front of you and look at our senses. And what do I see? What do I smell? What do I hear? What do I taste? How do I feel? And just really spend time with ourselves very intimately and with each other. So I'm excited about that. So be on the lookout.
I'm excited too. So for our guests, make sure you watch. We will be launching that. I would think sometime in the beginning of the 2026, maybe. I can't remember when we're talking. She said coordination is built out really well and is very supportive too. And the question we ask every guest is, how do you define innovation?
You think that I would just be able to tell you that naturally, since I'm kind of Innovation Insights, but intentional problem solving in a nutshell, where we co-create new ideas and approaches to break down, some barriers, open some doors. It's about finding creative ways to better serve the people and our communities together. And the one thing that we need to know is that we can't do this work alone. And so I think when we innovate together and collectively, we're better off. And it's way more doggone fun than any good by itself. And the cool thing about it is, and the one thing I really like about your consulting team is that we come from different backgrounds. And so across differences is essential. My way is not the only way, it's not the best way. But together we can center fairness and inclusion. And we can activate everyone's strength, not just my strengths, not just your strengths as the founder, but all of our strengths to create a long-lasting positive change. And so that's what I think innovation is, intentional problem solving across differences to create a better community for us, individually and collectively.
Lovely, lovely definition. And I love the co-create part of it, because like you say, we can't do it alone. People need people. We need people. And that's why I have surrounded myself with consultants that are all much smarter than me. Absolutely.
So. Yes, me too. You have to bring something to the table.
Oh, thank you for being here. And this has been just delightful to learn more about you and your work. So really appreciate it.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been an honor just to sit back and reflect a little bit too. So it felt good. It was cleansing. It's been cleansing. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Oh, to our audience, if you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and comment on the podcast. It helps us continue to have these impactful conversations like this one for you. Don't forget to learn more about Bridget's work. She's on LinkedIn. Follow her on there and at Bridge, and also watch for her programming that she will do with Innovation Insight. Stay connected with us. We're on all types of social media platforms. We're all over the place. So please come find us or visit us on our website too. All this information will be linked in the show notes, but we have a ton of resources, upcoming episodes, and ways to engage. And so thank you for tuning in, and keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.